new quarter last Sunday, and there's material that we're covering this quarter called Caring for the Needs of Others. As I've mentioned, that is quite a broad topic, a lot of things to consider. But in lesson one, I knew this would be something that obviously would be the foundation from which we would proceed to all of the various questions we could raise under this, and that is the idea of having a heart of a servant. I think it's very obvious, as we pointed out last week, that the mark of conversion is developing a heart of a servant. In order to develop a heart of a servant, you've got to change your attitude toward yourself, and folks, that is incredibly difficult. And you can change your attitude toward yourself and go back to those old selfish attitudes in time as a Christian. And so the driving force behind any change is going to be God. I'm actually going to be developing that concept in the sermon this morning on the seen and the unseen and how the unseen realm can move us greatly toward the path God wants in this life. Won't preach that lesson to you until service, but just a review this morning. We keep talking about, and as you look at the difficulty of serving God, I think the most difficult things in being a servant is working with people. People are difficult. People are unpredictable. People don't always see what they ought to see. People can be unfair. And people may not ever change. And so I think I've found in my life in working with Christians, the thing that oftentimes destroys Christians is relationships. Whether somebody has hurt them and they don't know how to handle that, or whether or not they've been influenced because of putting relationships above God. Relationships are a powerful tool for good and wrong. And so we started last week, we talked a lot about how we should follow the example of Jesus as a servant. And one of the things we talked about in this context was when we talk about, you know, Jesus says that he did not come to serve, to be served, but to serve. He's going to die as a ransom for many, Matthew 20:28. And we made this point last week, but I thought we would come back and make this point just to kind of really bring it into focus. Serving another. What is one of the greatest examples of serving another? For those of us who are married and who have had children, to me, that is one of the greatest natural examples of what it means to be a servant. We talked about last week about how when you brought your first child home from the hospital, you didn't decide to give that baby a can opener and can and say, we're going to be gone a few days. No, when you have a child that come home with you, that child is totally dependent upon you. And you learn to be a servant. So learning how to serve is an automatic thing. And one of the things about being a servant is that you're not always appreciated. I like how Paul talked about this in 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 14. Here he talks about the church at Corinth. And earlier in 1 Corinthians he talks about how he begat you through the gospel and how he was their spiritual father. He was their parent, so to speak. And he says, now for the third time I'm ready to come to you. And I will not be burdensome to you, for I do not seek yours, but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. So here's the concept of service, that here you are a parent, you provide, you serve. But now notice the lack of gratitude that might follow as well, verse 15. And I will very gladly spend and be spent for your souls. Though the more abundantly I love you, the less I am loved. And I think all parents could appreciate this, the struggle at times. I know that Yvette at times would talk about she prepared a meal and worked hard for a meal and served it to the kids, and they would go, ew, I don't like this. Or, you know, numerous other ways that you could see is here you are, you're pouring your heart out as a servant and you're not appreciated, but you still serve. Why do you serve your children? This is easy. We're a real super softball question. Why do you as parents serve your children? You love them. And that's really going to be the simple answer to how we become servants. And we'll be talking about that not only in this class, but in the sermon this morning as well. We learn to love them. And we mentioned this last week about how, again, You know, God is our Father. He knows how to give us good gifts. And here, even Jesus in His ministry, we won't reread this verse, but He says, you know how to give your children good gifts. Think about your Father and what He does to you. When we, as Christians, know what God has done for us, we want to be like God and be servants. Being a servant is the greatest thing we could be. I need to emphasize that to me because I like to be served. You know, the default position for us being pulled back to the world, we may tend to want to run from being a servant. But we know that, again, God serves us. Again, for those of you who are visiting, we covered most of this last week. And so, again, what I want to get to is Roman numeral 3, if we could. Number 6. We've been talking about serving others. So I'm going to move ahead in the outline. That was sort of a review. And I want to go ahead. Let's go ahead. Let's make sure. This is one other thing we covered when we closed last week. The greatest example of Jesus being a servant is the cross. But during His ministry, while Jesus was alive, in order to get through the thick heads of His disciples that you are to serve, He washed their feet. Again, the text is up. You're familiar with the passage. And they were shocked at that. They were shocked that He took that position. Verse 15, He says, but I have given you as an example that you should do as I have done to you. Verse 14, if I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. Serving. Is that who we are? Right now, just take a snapshot. Am I a servant? Do I view my service to God as an opportunity to help others? Do I get joy in helping others? Am I willing to help others, and even though I'm not patted on the back or people recognize me, am I willing to serve others even when they're ugly to me? That's the kind of heart we must seek. You know, during the ministry of Jesus, again, just touching on a few things, how often did He teach people to help others in need? The parable of the Good Samaritan, one of the keys of this parable, Luke 10:33. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. Let me ask a question, brethren. What's compassion? Compassion. In this text, compassion is feeling love. Seeing another's need and being concerned about it. Is compassion easy? Particularly, we live in a society, particularly, say, in a city, and we see people every day, and people come and go, and we don't know who to trust, and there's all kinds of activity going on. Is compassion easy? It's not. You know, I look at another person, and I want to care enough about them to know what they need. Now, I have to tell you, I am overwhelmed, too, by people coming and going. I can't always show compassion to everyone because I may not know everyone. It's a busy world. But compassion takes energy. It takes focus. You've got to get out of yourself. Another parable. Here the parable of the prodigal son is sometimes it's called. And it says, and he arose and came to his father, but when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. Here's the example of God. God had compassion on us. Yes. Yeah. For people, really people. Oh, people. Yes, people. I just want to keep emphasizing that, you know. How quick are we to judge people? How quick are we to devalue them? How quick are we to run from them? This is greatly challenging. In order to change a heart, we have to have a fundamental change in our attitude. You know, Jesus, during His ministry, again, I'm just going to hit this briefly, but we'll see Jesus moved with compassion. He healed people. Here was one that was a leper. Verse 41, Jesus, moved with compassion, stretched out His hand and touched him and said, I am willing, be cleansed. Another case of healing. Of course, in this case, He told them not to tell anybody, and they told everybody. And another case of healing, Matthew 20:30, He says, behold, two blind men sitting by the road, and when they heard that Jesus was passing by, cried out saying, "Have mercy on us, O Lord, Son of David." Then the multitude warned them that they should be quiet, but they cried out all the more, "Have mercy on us, Son of David." And so Jesus stood and called them and said, "What do you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Lord, that our eyes may be opened." So Jesus had compassion and touched their eyes. And immediately their eyes received sight and they followed him. You know, I know we read verses like that. Oh, yes, we know Jesus is compassionate. But what did Jesus get out of healing these people? Man with leper, people that were blind. What did he personally get out of it? I mean, he didn't get any physical advantage out of it, did he? He wasn't looking for popularity. Actually, the popularity that came from it is not what he wanted. It actually hindered his ministry. You see, our God is a God who loves to give. He's interested in us. He does want to provide what we really need. And when we begin to develop a mindset like that, is that I really want the purpose of my life to be to give and to provide, and with God's wisdom. That is the heart of a servant as we imitate our Lord. You know, not only in just the healing, but he also taught others. We're going to talk about in the next class we have, or the next outline we have, we're going to talk about the priority of service. We're going to talk about the difference between physical service and spiritual service. We're going to talk about wisdom that we need to have in knowing how and when to help. But in Mark 6 and verse 34, it says, Jesus, when he came out, saw a great multitude, was moved with compassion for them. Because they were like sheep not having a shepherd, so he began to teach them many things. Let me ask you, class, of those that may be hungry and those that needed spiritual food, which is greater? Which was the greater thing to do? Now, Jesus fed the hungry. In this case, he did it as a miracle because they wanted his teaching. But what is greater? The teaching that Jesus provided or the temporary food? Well, we see that, you know, Jesus does, I think the spiritual teaching that he gave was the ultimate purpose for his coming. And we'll be developing this, but Jesus in his ministry, when he saw people not having proper teaching, not being led spiritually, it says in Matthew 9, verse 36, but when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them. Because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. Let me ask a question of you, class. You don't have to ask me out loud, but personally. When was the last time you have been moved with compassion because people were not being taught? When was the last time maybe you went to a football game or some other thing and you saw all these multitudes of people and you're thinking, they need a teacher? You see how numbers sometimes can kind of deaden us? Here, the need for teachers. Notice what in verse 37, and he said to his disciples, "The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." You and I prayed that this morning, didn't we? I didn't pray that this morning. I should have. Do you see how a heart of compassion looking at spiritual realities changes us? Think about it. There's so much here. So much here. And I've kind of wanted to get to the questions this morning, and here we are. Okay. I want to be sure. I want to get to these discussion questions. I kind of want to try to finish lesson one. We don't have to rush through it, but we've already answered the question there on what is compassion. So here's the question. So these are some discussion questions, class, and let's discuss those if we could. First question. How does the world view other people? In other words, just the average Joe, you know, on the street. The average person on the street, how do they view other people? And when I'm speaking here of the world, I'm speaking of the influence of Satan upon men. How does the world view people? Look down on them? They're kind of like a hamburger wrapper. Well, while I'm getting my hamburger and that's helping me to get what I want, I like that wrapper, but once I've eaten the hamburger, what do I do with the wrapper? I throw it away. You see, we live in a dog-eat-dog world. And if you listen to the world, people are valuable to you. as long as they're useful to you. And so we live in the world of throwaway people. Now, why does the world despise being a servant? How many of you, you don't have to raise your hand, I don't know if we have any that served in the military. So my illustration may not go perfect here, but how many in the military like to do KP duty? What's KP duty? You know, what's that? Yeah, you do in the kitchen, cleaning pots and pans, scrubbing things, and you know, I guess at least seeing the movies. I was in the military, so I just have to judge for the movies. But KP duty is kind of, you know, here's some work you do for others. It's sort of a form of punishment in some cases. You're on KP duty. Well, why does the world despise them? What? What's that? That's right. That's right. Joy comes from what? Being served. And it's punishment to serve others. Again, I tell you, folks, this is inherent in terms of the teaching of the world. It's drilled into us, and it is going to be incredibly difficult to get that out of our thinking. We like to be comfortable. We like to have our fences up to protect us from people that we don't want to be around. And we like to be served. It's going to take a really powerful faith to overcome that kind of thinking. How does our conversation change, our conversion change how we think about other people? What is conversion? Let's just talk about that. If somebody is converted to Christ, tell me what that is. What process do they go through? What's the hardest thing about conversion? Changing what they're doing. What's that called? When we talk about a change of action, that comes from what? Repentance, which is a change of the will. Now, why in the world would we be motivated to change our will? Somebody help me here. Why did you become a Christian? Why were you motivated to give up your will? That sounds pretty risky to me, putting somebody else in the driver's seat. Tell me what moved you to change your will. Okay, our will fail, is what you're saying? Yeah. Sometimes crashing is a real good thing for us, isn't it? We kind of go, well, not just physically, but other ways too. And sometimes that's a good wake-up call. You know, to crash and burn. And what else? I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Just
going to heaven? What else causes us to change our will? I'm really driving for something. All these are good. Why would I change my will? Recognize your condition, that's right. But there's something else I'm looking for here too. Not just looking within at us, but when we look up to God and we look at Jesus Christ, what do we see that is a powerful force to change our will? Let me ask you this. When you think of your parents and their ability to change you, what's something about your parents that made you want to change for them? What's that? You love them. You know they love you. I want to keep going back to that, brethren, because I'm telling you, we've got to major in the love of God. And we've got to understand where we come from, the mess of our condition, but we've also got to see how God has freely given us that which we do not deserve. He continues to do that. If we can't see that, we won't serve. And you're going to see that both in the sermon and later. We're going to talk about attitudes toward brethren. If we're struggling with attitudes toward brethren, we're struggling because we're not seeing God. That is something for us to really think about. Number three, how did Jesus emphasize his life of service? And how did he demand that his followers become servants? We talked about that in our brief review. How did Jesus emphasize service in his ministry? What was the thing that slapped the disciples in the face? Really, the right up to the day, coming up to the day of his betrayal, what did he do to get their attention? He washed their feet, and then he gave emphasis to that. Matter of fact, there was another occasion, too. What was one of the great discussion points of the disciples? The day of his betrayal. The disciples were discussing how they can be servants like Jesus, right? Yeah, who was the greatest? And they didn't want Jesus to know. And Jesus said, this is not the way it's going to be with you guys. You're not going to be like the Gentiles, thinking the greatest one who is ruling. Easy to talk about this. Hard to put it in our lives. We've got to emphasize it. Number four, how should parenting teach us about being a servant? How does parenting teach us? What you do when you love that child, and that child is helpless, and it absolutely depends on you. What? You put them first. Great lessons here. Why are selfish people often unhappy?
They never get all they want.
No, it doesn't satisfy them. Eventually, if they do, they finally, it's kind of like, I've got it, now what? Yeah. Why are some selfish people unhappy? Give me more reasons. What makes us happy? I'm very serious about this. What makes us happy? Getting out of yourself. I will tell you, as Jesus said, it is more blessed to give than receive. We're made in the image of God. The ultimate fulfillment and purpose in life is going to come by giving. Let's go back to the family illustration. When you're on your deathbed, you're going to really be happy because you got a big old retirement account, right? Or how big a house you have and you're out of debt, right? What do you think about outside of God? Now, God is critical to think about on your deathbed. But as you're approaching death, who do you think about? Who do you think about? Now, none of us have been on our deathbed, I don't think. Maybe some of us have, you know, close to it. But what do you think of? What will you think of when your death approaches? Who are you going to think about? You're going to think about your family and your loved ones. I want to tell you, a happy, purpose-filled life is going to be a life where you look back and said, I've been a useful thing. You know, I've been useful to some people. I'm not that valuable, but I'm thankful that I have been able to serve, being your family or being others. I'm telling you. When God, Lord wants us to be a servant, He wants us to have an abundant life. And we've got to battle the thinking of the world that says otherwise. And then we talked about this just a moment ago. What is compassion and how did compassion move Jesus to act? And we've already talked about that. So anyway, any more on the servant heart of Jesus? Any discussion there? I want to go ahead and deal with the second half of the outline now if we could. Okay. Now let's go on the flip side of things here. What opposes a servant's heart? You know, we go to the occasion where we have the that we read earlier, but we'll read it again about the about here we would have the parable that Jesus taught of the Good Samaritan. It says, then Jesus answered and said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. The Bible doesn't tell us everything about the hearts of these people, but what do you think what was going through the mind of the people? Now, I heard the joke once. I think maybe one translation maybe put a lawyer. Why did the lawyer pass on the other side? Because he was already beaten and robbed. No, anyway, just kidding. Just a joke there. No, not against lawyers. There's a place for lawyers. So, but anyway, what would be in the mind? What would be in the mind of the ones passing on the other side?
Well, that's trouble. I don't want
anything to do with that. Okay. What else?
Themselves.
Yeah. And we don't know exactly what they were thinking, but I got an appointment. I got things to do. What else might they have thought? He probably deserved this. This is probably some thug that just was with a bunch of thugs and he just got, you know, they got a disagreement. It's probably best that he just get his due. Who knows what was going on, but what was going on is they moved on very quickly. Okay? They were indifferent. It's very easy to look the other way. It's very easy. How about this one? Now, see, here's where I have problems sometimes. You know what I think sometimes? If I preach on it, I've done what I ought to do. Now, preaching's good. And teaching a Bible class is good. And I'm telling you right now to be a servant, and I'm saying that I ought to be a servant. Everybody agree with that? Let's be servants. And then when we see somebody in need, we say, be warmed and filled. Somebody needs to serve you. Yeah, I do. I've done that. Yeah, sure. You know where I'm going. James 2:15. If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needful for the body, what does it profit? Why do we tend to be satisfied with words? I mean, we do this in a lot of areas. I do it. I have to catch myself of, why do words somehow make us feel good? Let's say if we're going to help somebody, what steps do you need to go through to help somebody? Let's just go through the steps. Here somebody's in need. Here you are. Let's do it. Step 1, 2, 3, 4. How many steps you want to make? What's the first step in order to help somebody? I'll start us off. You got to notice them, okay? You got to notice them. Step 2. What's another step? You got to know their needs. Step 3. Yeah, you've got to put them ahead of yourself. We might even say we could acknowledge their needs. You know what? You need some medical help. I want you to be encouraged. I see your need. Now, I want to tell you, if somebody said that, I would be encouraged, because what am I thinking if I'm the one in need? Somebody says I'm in need and they see it. What do I expect them to do? Do what they can. Why is it we stop there? What's the faulty process in our thinking? It's a very common process. Like I say, you know, I get up there, preach on anger, and then go get mad at somebody in traffic, you know, shake a fist at me. Oh, what am I doing? You know, here. What's the problem? What's the process when we say, here is a need? You know, the process is we salve our conscience. It kind of works a little bit, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah, that person's in need. People ought to notice that person's in need. I noticed that person's in need. And here was all these other people. They didn't notice this person was in need. And so you see how it is, where I'm kind of like, well, yeah. How about this one? Now, let me say something about being too busy. Brethren, we do have a finite area. And I will tell you, in the area of teaching, in the area of evangelism, in the area, and I would say for members of this congregation, we have been given opportunities that are massive. And one thing I've had to do, I had to do this for years, is let's say if a doctor came in, and maybe this is not the greatest illustration, but I use it anyway. A doctor came in and there had been a disaster and there's a room filled with people that are wounded. What was the first thing? And you've only got one doctor. What is the first thing the doctor does when you got a situation like that? You got fewer, not enough medical care and a lot of wounded. What do you do? Well, you might have watched some of the MASH, you know, shows years ago, or some disaster show. What's the first thing the doctor has to do? You prioritize. And I want to tell you, even in the realm here, in terms of just the teaching area, brethren, there's lots of opportunity. Now, sometimes that lots of opportunity, what does it tend to want? When the opportunity is greater than what I could physically do, sometimes you pull back. And what you have to do, you have to prioritize. I mean, I'm going to tell you, we'll talk, that's next outline we're going to do. It's a very ambitious outline. I'm going to talk about realms of prioritizing. And I'm not talking about ignoring things, but I'm saying that there are times, for instance, let's suppose we made it our goal here in Auburn. And by the way, I don't think this is the goal Jesus wants us to have. I do not, I certainly don't believe it's the goal of a local church. But let's say the goal of local church was to eradicate, if somebody put that as the goal of local church, to eradicate all poor in Auburn. What problem would we have with that? We would have a lack of resources. And oftentimes what happens with our government is there's a lack of wisdom too. But that's again, we'll talk about that in the next outline. You know, I'm going to try to deal with some tough questions here in the next outline about how you prioritize and then even wisdom of really directions you ought or ought not to go. But in my life, I have to set some priorities. And I want to teach the world, but I'll tell you what, I have some responsibilities to teach my children. I have some other responsibilities. And I do prioritize. I prioritize things. We all should, and we should do it not selfishly, but unselfishly. You know, sometimes we talk about reasons why people do not have a servant's heart is that sometimes people serve others. But notice how I phrased it here, in order to selfishly gain something. Can anybody think of how a person could serve another in order to selfishly gain something? I'm going to give some embarrassing illustrations that I'm embarrassed to confess. But years ago, and I'm not against brethren selling things, but as when I first started preaching, I didn't have a clue about finances and support. And I got into financial difficulty and I decided to get with some brethren who had a product to sell. And there was temptations when somebody new came into the congregation to be thinking about, well, maybe I can sell them a product. Now, I never acted on that. But I've known of brethren who have. I'll never forget a man that I was working with trying to baptize him. And he was complaining that nobody was paying any attention to him visiting our services. And I noted that. I noted where he was very happy. He was a guy, he got in the foyer and people ignored him. He was a very outgoing guy and it broke my heart. And guess what happened? The next week, somebody invited him to their house for a meal. I remember being so excited about that. Guess what the purpose of the invite was? So he could go sell something. It was a business proposition. And I'm going, oh my. You know, there's a lot of ways we could serve others for self. Give me some examples, brethren. Well, let me ask you this. Let's take the example, while we're waiting for that second bell, in the Sermon on the Mount. Did the publicans and Pharisees do good to other people? Did they love other people and provide for the needs of other people? Yeah. Which ones? Their own and the ones that could do them good in return. I'll do you good and you do me good, you know? Yeah, yeah. As long as you're meeting my needs, I'll meet your needs. I don't think I want to have the heart of a Pharisee. I serve others, buddy. I serve others. And I would even say this in terms of family, serving your family. You know, there is certain, like I say, there can be a selfish aspect of that. Not saying it is. But, you know, another area, and we'll just mention this briefly. But, you know, there are those in the church sometimes that seek to divide a church. And there are those described here as those with smooth words and flattering speech deceive the hearts of the simple. It's interesting in Galatians 4:16, he says, "Have I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth?" And he says, "They zealously court you, but for no good." Yes, they want to exclude you that you may be zealous for them. Sometimes there will be people, when they don't think you have a doctrinal core and they don't think you'll oppose some things, they'll get you in private and they'll start bragging on you. They'll talk about how good you are, and they'll give you attention, attention, attention. According to this verse, why are they zealously courting this person? Their goal is to separate them from their brethren. And so be careful. There are those, there's nothing new. This has happened. It happens in every generation. It happens sometimes in big ways or in small ways in local churches. Churches of any size, you'll eventually have pocket groups. And some, like I say, end up, they're trying to, they've got some kind of goal where they're trying to separate people. Okay, we'll cover a little more of this, and we'll also get into lesson two next week. Thank you for your attention. And those of you who are visiting, sermon outlines are on the table if you don't have one of those. Thank you.